Part 1. The Challenge of a Mismatched Marriage. Chapter 1. Entering into the Mismatch. The weather was crisp and clear on the day after Christmas, 1966, when my friend Pete and I took the train from our suburban homes into downtown Chicago. We wandered around the loop for a while, reveling in the bustle of the city, but then came time for me to bring him on a pilgrimage that I took as often as I could. Fighting the wind, we trudged across the Michigan Avenue Bridge and stopped in front of the Wrigley Building. There we stood, our hands shoved into our pockets for warmth, as we gazed across the street at the Gothic majesty of Tribune Tower. I can't remember whether I muttered the word aloud or if it merely echoed in my mind, "Someday." Pete was quiet. High school freshmen are entitled to their dreams. We lingered for a few minutes and watched as people flowed in and out of the newspaper office. Were they the reporters whose bylines I studied every morning? Or the editors who dispatched them around the world? Or the printers who manned the gargantuan presses? I let my imagination run wild until Pete's patience wore thin. We turned and walked up the magnificent mile, browsing through the overpriced and pretentious shops until we decided to embark on the 20-minute walk back to the train station. As we passed in front of the Civic Opera House, though, I heard a familiar voice beckon from the crowd. "Hey, Lee, what are you doing here?" called Clay, another high school student who lived in my neighborhood. I didn't answer right away. I was too captivated by the girl at his side, holding his hand and wearing his gold-engraved ID bracelet. Her brown hair cascaded to her shoulders. Her smile was at once coy and confident.
Just hanging around," I managed to say to Clay, though my eyes were riveted on his date.
By the time he introduced us to Leslie, I wasn't thinking much about Clay or Pete or the fact that my hands were getting numb from the cold and I was standing ankle-deep in soot-encrusted snow. I made sure, however, to pay close attention when Clay pronounced Leslie's name. I knew I'd need the proper spelling to look it up in the phone book. After all, everything's fair in love and war. From fairy tale to nightmare. As for Leslie, I found out later that she wasn't thinking about Clay as the two of them rode the train home that afternoon. When she arrived at her house in suburban Palatine, she strolled into the kitchen and found her mother, a Scottish war bride, busily preparing dinner. "Mom," she announced, "today I met the boy I'm going to marry." The response wasn't what she expected. Her mother barely looked up from the pot she was stirring. In a voice mixed with condescension and skepticism, she replied dismissively, "That's nice, dear." But there was no doubt in Leslie's mind, nor in mine. When I called her that next night from a payphone outside a gas station near my house, with four brothers and sisters, that was the only way I could get some privacy, we talked as if we'd known each other for years. People like to debate whether there's such a thing as love at first sight. For us, the issue had been settled once and for all. Leslie and I dated almost continuously throughout high school, and when I went off to study journalism at the University of Missouri, she moved there so we could be close to each other.